Hi, and welcome to the Flute Talk Podcast, where we talk about all things flute and answer your questions live on YouTube. If you want to help us out, be sure to subscribe to our channel and add us to your podcast feed over on iTunes or Google Play.
We all need sheet music, and we're proud to announce that we're working with Sheet Music Plus, home of the world's largest sheet music selection, and is a proud sponsor of the Flute Channel.
Finally, if you're looking into buying a new flute, be sure to check out the Flute Center of New York at flutesforsale.com. With our code TFC at checkout, you'll be able to try 3 flutes or piccolos for 10 days, and whichever instrument you choose, you get an extended 18-month warranty on it. So be sure at checkout to put in the special code TFC at flutesforsale.com. Now on with the show.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Flute Talk Podcast. I'm Nick.
And I'm Emily.
Hi Emily.
Hi Nicola.
How's it going?
Very well.
Good. So, So we have done a bunch of stuff. We had some just practicing stuff, and the Flute Festival is coming up this week, so that's kind of exciting.
Yeah.
Flute Festival time.
If you're Wednesday in the Montreal area.
Yeah, Wednesday to Friday this in Montreal. So if you're in the area.
We still have
yeah, there's space available. Yeah, more so welcome. You can come out in one day. You can come for all 3 days. You can come just for the concert.
If you do montrealflutefestival.com,
you'll find all the information there.
The concert is on
also
Friday,
on
Friday evening.
Yep.
And you can also only come for the concert.
Yeah.
And meet us and
yeah, totally a lot of fun. I know a lot of people in there. I know Luke is going to come in from the chat and stuff like that, and a bunch of other people too. And we have people coming for 3 days, which is great. And be sure to let us know if everything's going well with the stream. Also how it sounds and stuff, just let everybody know. What else was there? There was something else, but I can't remember. It's okay. But we have a great question. Today's all about long tones, because this week I read a comment that was really good, and I'm going to share that with you and share that with everyone else. The person, I forget their name, but I will say that later. I didn't write it down, but that's okay. I have a question. How do we as flute players decipher between talent and hard work? I'm asking mainly in regards to tone. According to my brain, if I practice technique at a slow level and speed it up, I can get the technique. However, for this tone, this is not the case. Or however, for tone, this is not the case. For tone, everyone says to do long tones. However, everyone who does these long tones, at least my colleagues, already have a neutral and often good/great tone quality. When they do long tones, it makes them sound better. However, when I do long tones, nothing really happens. In fact, my tone is completely unrelated to practicing. I find that my tone responds mostly to the humidity of the room that I play in rather than how much I practice. I know of two other colleagues who have the same dilemma. They practice, but their tone, like mine, is perpetually subpar. Not trying to be mean or harsh on them or myself. I'm trying to get a point across. While some of my other colleagues may practice a lot or never practice, yet have great tone. I might note that these colleagues don't seem to have superior knowledge or insight regarding the flute. Does any of this resonate? Can flute tone be taught to someone who struggles greatly with it after years of playing? How exactly does tone occur?
Well, there's a lot in there.
There's a lot.
But yes, it can be taught.
Yeah, they can.
It can be taught. And another thing is, long tones, I think, are a tool.
Yeah.
To work on your tone. It's an exercise. You do the exercise and then you should get a better tone.
Mm.
Let's say I'm not a bodybuilder, but let's say you're trying to get in better shape. And you go to the gym, but when you do some of the exercises, you have a bit very bad posture while doing it. Then you'll hurt yourself.
Mm-hmm,
you won't get in better shape. Yeah. You'll get in worse shape.
Mm-hmm.
An exercise, it's just an exercise.
Right.
You can also not do long tones and get a good tone.
Mm-hmm.
Because maybe you get your good tone from other exercises you do. Or the way you practice, you
maybe find other
maybe find
exercises that do help your tone. Maybe you do those instead.
What I think is, if your tone is not the way you want it to be, is not good or whatever you want to say,
mm-hmm.
however you want to say it, it's probably not an exercise, that's going to help you as much as figuring out what's keeping your sound from being good. Like, are you pushing your lips forward? Are you blowing in a constant manner? Are you opening the throat or closing the throat? Are you so nervous on some notes that everything closes? I would say instead of focusing on which exercise, you can keep long tones and look in the mirror.
Sure.
And check what you're doing. Maybe find your best note and see what you're doing, and then try to find your, you know, look at it a bit like a researcher. And I think this person has a researcher mind a little bit, because it's all like,
sure.
Oh, this
that's
person.
What it sounds
like.
That's what it
like
sounds
a like. Scientific mind, mm-hmm. you know? But now look inwards, because the research has been a lot about others and comparing the outside. But maybe now it has to be more about himself or herself, you mm-hmm. know? Being like, okay, this note sounds... When I sound good... It's probably not the humidity of the room, you know. It's probably not those types of things. Mm-hmm. Trying to figure out what's going on there. How does it feel in your body, and reproducing that. When it doesn't sound good, I heard of a teacher. He was a trombone teacher, but I thought it was a very good idea. His students told me that when they had a bad sound, sometimes he would say, make it worse. And figure out what you just did to make it even worse, and now do the opposite of that, you know?
Uh-huh.
It's about trying to figure it out. You can do long tones. You can practice badly and just make things worse. It's not just about practicing. It's about being aware.
The awareness factor is key, for sure. Like, I agree.
And a good teacher is supposed to help you,
mm-hmm.
not by just saying how... to get a good tone, but how you
mm-hmm.
help you find your way, because
mm-hmm.
it's all different.
Yeah.
I don't play exactly like you, because I have my teeth are not exactly the same, and our mouths and our throats and our faces.
Nothing is
and
in fact the same,
so
except us being human.
There's like...
Really, yeah.
There's big lines that everyone kind of follows, but then there's little differences.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's people that do it completely differently, and wow, it's amazing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I really like the make it worse thing. Like, you make it worse, it's sort of like a reset for your brain, and then you go back, and then your brain reacclimates to... That's how I would use it as, you know. It's like a reset, then you go right back in to try again, and then somehow your brain is now figuring out another way to approach the new sound that you have in your head.
And I think also it's probably helpful to feel less nervous about it. Oh, it has to be beautiful. No, look, you can make
yeah.
it ugly as well.
Also, it's just,
you know?
Yeah, and like long tones.
It's just
practicing. Yeah. And also, long tones are so general. Like, the long tones that we all know about, that we all can most likely understand when we say long tones, that style is not even a style to anything related to it. Like, it could be, you could do long tones in the Baroque style. You can do, like,
what do you mean?
You know what I mean? Like, it's the sound of it itself. Like, what does long tones
Baroque style? What do you mean by that?
Maybe I'm a little talking out there somewhere, but it's I'm just saying long tones only take care of one element, you know?
Yeah, it's just a moment for you to focus on your sound only.
Right.
But then, let's say you structure your practice like this. You do long tones, and then you do scales and technical exercises.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
Let's say
okay.
your tone is good in the long tones, and you really focus on some elements to keep your sound good.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you start doing your scales, you completely forget about it. You know, it's really about being aware all the time.
Yeah.
But also, as I think what you meant is there's different exercises. It's not just...
Yeah, I knew somebody who... Yeah, exactly. I knew somebody who said that, you know, make your pieces tone exercises, you know, as well.
Yeah.
And I think, like, really learning different styles, because I think we get a little restricted when we think long tones are supposed to help us with all other styles of music, when, to me, I think it's...
No, of course not.
Of course not.
People think that?
Yeah. That's what, oh, yeah. People
no,
think,
it's just...
People think
it's
a remedy. A lot of people, even I used to, like, it was the remedy to fix what was wrong with your tone. Because tone was connected to so much. It was, yeah. I knew a lot of people that thought like that.
It's not.
I know it's not. I know it's not.
Usually when you do long tones, you do very small intervals. You do semitones or... But when you play, you don't only play small intervals.
I know.
So if you only practice that, it's not enough. I think harmonics, and then I do a lot of octaves, like the dee da dee dee da dee dee da dee dee, those types of things. And you can also check in the book De la Sonorité by Moïse. Mm-hmm. I'll try to say it more with an English accent. De la Sonorité by Moïse. Marcel Moïse. There's a lot of good exercises there for sound. It doesn't have to be always the same thing. But maybe also our video about how to get rid of the air in your sound might
help as well too,
be helpful.
Because it's something. Sometimes it's those elements that are disrupting the tone. And that, and it just, yeah, it just sounds like that to me, that it's a bit... overthought, like we're over analyzing, or putting too much on that long tones are this very, very important thing. And maybe if it's even I think there's more things, like trying to get rid of the air in your sound might be the thing that might help a lot, you know, or trying other exercises.
And what I mean is it's the same goal, long tones in that video, like it's just we titled it that way,
titled
but it's
that
the
way.
Same goal, but
which is
the thing is there's different exercises in that video than long tones that are more efficient than long tones, I think. And you know, it's I think we also create superstitions,
of course,
with
that's
the flute.
Like
some of those superstitions are, oh, you have to warm up before you play. I think, what is that?
It's not even a superstition. It's a philosophy, my dear. I think a lot of people, that's their philosophy. You came and you have to warm up before you play, you know?
No, I think it's a superstition.
Sure.
I don't think they might think it's a philosophy. It's a superstition.
Sure. I think it's philosophy. But yeah, totally.
Because if philosophy, it's a way of thinking, and it's a way of trying to figure out what the truth is. There's no truth, and you have to... it's just a superstition. It's like thinking that, it's like any other superstition. Black cats will make you have a bad things happen to you. It's just a I don't think you have to, and I don't think you have to all the time. Maybe if you didn't practice for a while, maybe if you feel some of the elements in your sound are not the way you want them, you can use some exercises. But do you have to before you start playing, every time you start playing? I think we put, because what superstitions do is that they make us feel very uneasy when we don't do those things. So if you don't have time to do it, then if you don't have time to do it, then you'll be super nervous that you didn't do it. And it's just you program yourself to think that it's important. That not only is it important, it's necessary, or else you'll fail miserably, you know?
Yeah, another exercise, Marie was saying, the Moy's 24 little etudes. Those are, in fact, I think, even better than the long tone thing in the De La Sonorité, that other book, that 24, the one that's very easy, it says, but really it's actually quite difficult. I learned that years after De La Sonorité. I found out that book existed, and there was a class that went through the whole entire 24 of them, and it was like 5 hours long. Like, it was so interesting to see how you can make those different phrases in different styles and in different ways to communicate those phrases. It was super interesting. That book is great. So Maria, that's good that you're learning it. It's a very interesting book.
And also you can make yourself if you say, oh, I'm going to do long tones until my sound gets good. No, just try to build everything build everything.
Yeah, but that way, what the people say like that, that's what I'm saying, is that they treat it like it's this, if I take enough doses, I'm finally going to get better.
And that's why I agree with you that doing studies and other things is efficient, because you have to play and not just focus on one thing and stop yourself from progressing until that gets better.
Totally.
You have to let it go a little bit.
Totally. So if you guys have any questions about tone, we can, talk more about it during the podcast today. We also have questions in the chat already. Let us know what you guys think as well. Sam Green wants to know, I would like to ask for some help with high E. It just seems so unstable. more so than notes higher than that. I think that it might just be that, and I need to practice solely that note more to develop my embouchure. But any outside help useful? Any help would be useful. Yeah, because the E is very difficult, because that's why there's even a facilitator inside of it. High E, when
not
you make
the
flute.
Not all the flutes have it, huh?
No, all flutes have that problem. All flutes have that problem with
no,
high
E. No, but some flutes have a little...
Yeah, the facilitators, or they have a split E, which vents the hole and closes the hole so it can stabilize the E. Because naturally, when the flute is built, the E was always one of those ultra stubborn notes.
Because it's a harmonic fingering.
Yeah,
really.
So some people put donuts. There's little metal donuts that partially facilitate the hole. So it's like a little disc that they solder in there. You can get that available as an option.
So you go
most
to your
flutes don't have
flute
it.
Technician and
yeah.
you ask for a donut for,
yeah,
your,
donut,
for
yeah,
your E and
yeah.
they'll know what it is.
They'll know what it is, yeah. And it's usually a pretty cheap job. If you're not going to be selling your flute and buying a new one anytime soon. Most student flutes don't have that. Most student flutes don't have split E's. They have offset G's, but the offset G doesn't necessarily will have that little prong there that facilitates the E. So yeah, split E, that's why it's like a split E mechanism. When you have a split E, that helps the E be better. Because without it, like a lot of student flutes, it sounds pretty bad. It's very unstable. Yeah, because it's a loose harmonic fingering. So it's not just you. The flute is imperfect. Flute is not perfect. So, yeah. Yeah, you can do that. There's a donut. There's also conversions.
But it's like another how I teach it to my students. Because even when you have that donut, it's still a bit harder. And then you have the F sharp also. That's a fragile one.
It definitely helps, though.
I have a student who has more difficulty with the F sharp than the E. You know, it depends. But even if you take care of the E, the donut will not take care of your F sharp. But how I teach it is I try to say that it's as if you had, you know, you're in an elevator and you have different levels on your... So you have like first level, second level, third level for your sound, you know, for your different octaves. But the E and F sharp, it's like they're on their own level. It's another.
Mm.
So you have to blow it a bit differently. Put a little bit more into it.
Mm.
I'd like to reread that because there was a lot of stuff I want to make sure we answered.
Mm-hmm. But yeah. So while she does that, we just want everybody know that we also have our Patreon. We just got a new patron today, and that helps us out too. Patreon.com/theflutechannel. There you can help us out by donating as little as $1 a month to help us make more videos and produce more. And it's totally optional, but it really does help us out. And also the Flute Festival, the Montreal Flute Festival is going to be starting on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday here in Montreal. So if you guys are interested, if you're in the area, definitely check out that information and see if you want to sign up and join in our classes and play some flute, listen to some flute, and talk to us and answer any questions that you have. And what else is there? We have a bunch of other stuff. No, I think that's it. There's other stuff, but yeah.
Is there other questions?
Many questions. Yeah.
Because we kind of did, just how does tone occur, we didn't really say. We have a video that's called Basic Embouchure.
Yeah, Basic Embouchure for the Flute, I think, yeah.
Yeah, I think there you'll find the answer. You know, it's like it's a whistling. You have a little bit of air going on both ways of the lip plate, and yeah, I think you should watch that video. Mm. Might help, and then maybe if you have more questions, come back and ask mm-hmm. them.
Yeah, a lot, like we always say, a lot of air blowing into the flute does help with tone. It does clear things up. It's usually when there's not enough energy that you introduce a lot of like this noise and all these things that you don't like.
And the thing is, you don't have any resistance in the embouchure with the flute. It's not like on the trumpet or any other instrument. There's resistance. We don't. It's an open embouchure. And so if you don't put resistance with your abdominals by really pushing with strength, like with some resistance kind of thing, then people tend to put resistance elsewhere in their bodies. they tend to put resistance in the throat by closing the throat or closing the hole, or so you have to put the resistance in the right spot, which is the belly, really. Mm-hmm. I think that's what I notice. So yes, blowing a lot.
Silver flute, he or she wants to know, how do you double tongue the high notes without tonguing very hard? I always struggle with this because we have to play our chromatic scales at 120 in 16th notes, at 120 in 16th notes, and we tongue it for district band.
Okay. Well, if you think it's too, too harsh or too...
Without tonguing very hard. How can you make it sound light? Because they're tonguing.
Well, instead of doing taka, you can do daga. So that's
so daga instead of taka?
Yeah, you can try that. And it's like, it's a bit closer in the mouth as well. Like, taka, it's really front and back. And daga gets more in the middle, both of them. Daga, 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 daga. It's more like you're brushing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You're not as much going, I don't know how to say, but you're not punching it. You're just brushing it. Daga, 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 daga.
Okay. So hopefully that helps, yeah. We have a double
tonguing.
And
you have to make sure you continue
to... Yeah, we have a double tonguing video, I think, too, and a triple tonguing video.
And you have to make sure you continue to use those abdominals to push the air.
Yeah. Robert Cowles, he wants to know, can you explain to me the difference between dark and bright tones? What is meant by this or these? What is meant by these?
Usually when people say dark, they mean there's more edge to the sound, like... It's more more timber, and bright is I can give an example, maybe.
Cool.
Okay, let's be careful here.
Take your time.
There's
while you do that. It's similar to that for sure. There's a style helps with on what you're playing, and also they all play contributing things, but yeah, there's a general dark and bright.
The color there. Did you hear it? Am I the only one who heard it?
I don't know.
I'll do it again. So I'll do something a bit more.
Kidding.
I should play.
I'm just kidding.
This way.
You're okay the way you are.
Okay. So the first one. You were kidding. So you knew what I was doing. You
let's
heard
do it,
it
again. Let's do it again. Okay. Yeah. Let's do it again.
So. Difference.
Sure, yeah.
So which one was darker?
It depends on my taste. First one was darker, I thought.
Yeah, first one was darker.
Uh-huh.
It's just more timber, like, nyeh, and the second one more, oh.
Uh-huh.
It's easier if you change register, but, you know.
Uh-huh. You kind of feel, and plus we're kind of cursed with an instrument that always sounds bright. So, you know, we're known as a chirpy, 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 chirpy type of thing all the time, you know? So even in... I feel we have to work always a bit harder to be darker.
Yeah. You know, but it's also sometimes in the energy you put in and the
way it is. That's what I'm saying. That's what's best part of what tone color is the energy you put into it.
It's,
you know, timbre and edge, that's equal. The other side of that equal sign is energy and the amount of energy. It's physics, right? You put in that amount of energy, you get that type of sound, you know?
Yeah, but it's also where you direct the air.
That's what
plate.
I mean. Yeah.
It's not just more energy, it's where you...
Energy plus where you put it, plus it's all these little equations in order to get those types of things. I knew a person who thought of it like that. He said, I have to mix these, but he thought of it in colors. So he's like, I have to mix gray and black to make this type of edge, or I need to mix green and blue to make something else. Like, he really, and it worked for him. It was crazy. It worked very well. And I know a lot of people that thought it very systematically. It's a very interesting approach.
Well, you have to find your own way of No one can teach you that. You have to teach it yourself. Like, yeah, which images are going to help you?
Yeah, what bridges of connections you need to make.
I used to think about eating. You know, I'm going to make this one like ice cream. I'm going to make this one spicy.
You can find
any, like, sometimes I imagine movements. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you can use different...
Mm-hmm. I think even students can...
Different senses to inspire mm-hmm. yourself. Mm-hmm. Music doesn't have to be only mm-hmm. with your ears, you know? Yeah. You can use colors. Yeah. A lot of people use colors mm-hmm. that are more visual. Mm-hmm. I'm not that visual, so sometimes I use more, like, tastes and mm-hmm. and movements mm-hmm. and stuff mm-hmm. like that. Depends, you know? Mm-hmm. Can use emotions.
Yeah. And beginners can do this, too. It's not an advanced technique. At all,
it's a way to have fun playing music
and exploring all the weird, all the, it could be very weird, very cool, very typical sounds, you know, so many different types of ways. It's not
and
an advanced
sometimes
thing.
It's not just gonna be in your sound, but it's gonna direct your whole musicality. Mm-hmm. Because you can't, if you try to control every little aspect of flute playing separately, your brain's gonna break.
Oh yeah.
But when you use a full image or a story, or then you align your body to do all those things without being completely mm-hmm. aware of what's happening. Mm-hmm. I remember I was studying in a pre-university level. I had a problem with a movement. I don't know, a slow movement, not that like very easy technically, but with the sound, the colors, I couldn't find it. And we were trying to figure out something technical to fix it, my teacher and I. You know, maybe if you blow more here, maybe if you blow more like this, then checking the mirror. And then at one point she said, you know what, sometimes it's not the physical aspect that's gonna cure it, it's the imagination.
Mm-hmm.
And then everything will float. Let's figure, how, what do you think of that piece? What does it make you think of? You know, it was written during the war, blah, blah, blah. And we started talking about it, and then I played it, and I was in that inspired mood, and it was all taken care of.
Hmm.
So sometimes we're too technical, and we forget that our bodies can do so much without controlling it. If you just let it do its thing, it's gonna do it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so there we go. Yeah. Gabriel Mesquita. Oh, hopefully I'm pronouncing that right. I'm from Brazil and I am a saxophone player. Does long tones work good to get changing the embouchure? Like, does it help to change the embouchure? Because, you know, if the switch back and forth, like...
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Because it will place your sound, you know. But it's all about your... You have to know what sound you want before you start your long tones. And then you do your long tones trying to go to that sound that you want.
Yeah, you're trying to recall the most...
Because just doing fit without... You know, it's the whole thing of... You have to know what you want.
Yeah.
You hear the sound, you try to get that sound, and you're only focused on that, so it's going to help.
Yeah, it's going to help make a preset embouchure for yourself, so you have a different embouchure for different instruments.
Yeah.
Because the body can change. The body can do that. You know, you can mm-hmm. you can tell your ears and your brain to move your lips the specific way that you train it to. So, yeah. What else is here? There's a good one here. How different is the piccolo from the flute? Kitty Paws 170.
Well, the piccolo is a smaller instrument
mm-hmm.
with a smaller embouchure. So you have to be very focused, like send the air on that very small hole, and have a good air pressure, because if you stop supporting, the sound will not be so good right away.
Mm.
And we also have a video about starting on the piccolo, I think. Don't mm-hmm. we? Yeah, we do.
I think we do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but in short, it's that. It's pretty easy. I think it's the same fingerings, it's the same everything, just smaller. So you have to think everything a bit smaller.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you can do all the same exercises you would do with your flute, with your piccolo. You can do long tones to try to find your tone. But yeah, long tones, it's not it's really you have to be aware all the time when you do it. If you just go fee 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 fee, it's you know, it's about listening and how can I get something better. And that's why I think practicing those in front of a mirror can be good sometimes, or but sometimes also closing your eyes and just trying to feel how you you can move it around. You don't have to always do it the same way.
Maria says she wishes she could be at our festival. She's going to be going to London and she's going to hear Stefan Håkonsson. He's going to be performing there. I kind of know who he is. That's cool. Well, you can come anytime. Next year we're going to do it 4 days and it's going to be really awesome. Tarius wants to know, what are the downsides, if any, of playing first and second octave E without the pinky pressing down on the D sharp key?
First and second, there's no advantage of not putting it. And the third register.
But playing E, a lot of people, and maybe the person's saying, no, like E, yeah, I think maybe it's D that has a little bit of a problem when you cover D in the low register and you don't press it down. No, what is it?
It becomes E flat.
It becomes E flat. No, there's another one. There's a reason. Oh, I don't remember which notes they are.
What I know is that when we answered that person with the high E, we forgot to say that if you remove your pinky on the third octave E, it's easier to...
For some flutes, it stabilizes it. Some flutes, it makes it worse. It. Yeah.
But, well, most flutes I've ever tried, it worked. But that's the advantage, but only on the third octave. On the first two octaves, removing your pinky doesn't have an advantage.
I'm confusing it with the index.
Yeah, the index finger. That's for the D and D sharp. But for the E, the only reason I would remove it is if I have to do an E and then I have to do a low C or a low C sharp right after. Sometimes I'll play without the pinky so I can put it back faster.
Some people they use the pinky as a stabilizing part. I think that's the reason, sort of, why it was introduced for the hand for stabilization. But you don't necessarily need it if your stabilization is good. If your hand's good, you don't necessarily...
It doesn't change much.
No. Nope. So hopefully that answers your question. What do we got here? A lot of people say I should go... a lot of people say I should go... I should do Daga, but when I start swinging it, I try double-tonguing and stuff. Okay. So a lot of people say I should do Daga, but I start swinging it, and when I try double tonguing it softly, I don't know what that last sentence makes no sense, but it's okay. I don't understand that.
I start swinging it when I try double tonguing it softly. So swinging means like dug.
Yeah, dug, dug, dug. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, that's probably it. Yeah.
When you go faster, it does that?
I guess so. I guess when you speed up rather than slowing down.
Well, if you go very fast, you won't be able to go dug, 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 dug. At one point, it's going to stabilize.
Yeah, it's not going to swing anymore.
Just be aware, practice it slowly, and then dug, dug. And you can practice without a flute. Dug, 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 dug. You know, and also practice it backwards. Sometimes it's just that one of them is too strong in comparison to the other, so maybe practice it gada 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 gada, and it might put it back in place by starting with ga. You shouldn't use daga all the time. They're for different purposes, you know. If you want something more sharp, if you want something more, you know, an articulation that's a bit more legato. If you want, it depends on what you want to play. Mm-hmm. Those are just different colors on your palette. Mm-hmm. But doesn't mean because you like the yellow, you should never use the blue. You know, it's
Silverflute wants to know, when playing piccolo with a band or orchestra, how do you mean to maintain balance and the high notes and just make sure that you're not too loud?
Can ask the conductor if you're too loud, because we're very close from our instrument. We might think we're too loud, but maybe the conductor thinks we're fine.
Maybe he's like, I need more piccolo.
Maybe he does need more. You know, you can just check with the conductor, because the conductor, really, his job or her job is to, a bit like a painter, you know, he has the step back from the painting, and he can look and see what's missing and what's too much, and say a little bit less of this, a little bit more of that. That's his, the outside ears, mm-hmm, really. Mm-hmm. That's his job to know. Mm-hmm. So I would do that. I would just ask, mm-hmm, or ask people in the hall.
Yeah.
And then with time, when you get the retroaction of that, you'll be able to adjust, and at one point you'll know, mm-hmm, what is too loud, what is fine, is not loud enough, because you'll have the retroaction of, no, that's fine, you know. Mm-hmm. I think that's how I would do it. You have a
Thanks. Nobody will.
Maybe kind of. Okay.
Yeah. For those people who are just listening audio-wise, something's on my nose. Amelie wants, or Robert Cowles wants to know, can you give us an example of how you would direct your students to perform long tones?
Depends on my student.
You don't want to play your flute?
No, because there's no point. You know, it's really, I look at my student,
sure,
and then I try to figure out what's going on there, what's making it difficult for them. If they're,
what are
sometimes
some ways?
It's all good, you know. Mm. And then usually I try to ask them questions to know how they perceive things. So recently I had a new student, and I asked, I saw he was making a lot of movements between different octaves and working very hard. So I asked, how do you play different octaves? And he started to explain very complicated things he was doing between each one of them, each register. And I said, okay. And I said, you know, it's a bit complicated, all that. What's your favorite register on your flute? And then he said, the low register. I said, well, that's where I think you're right. Mm-hmm. That's your best register, and that's the simplest when you explained it to me, and I think you should apply that to all of them. Right. But another student was a bit more beginner, and he was just pushing his lips forward and doing something with his nose, like being, mm-hmm, nervous every time he reached certain notes. So I practiced different ways with him, gave him other exercises, doing octaves, going from a low note to a higher note without moving anything, trying to stay relaxed, because the movement in his face was not the problem. It was a symptom of the stress he had about the high notes, you know. So we worked on that psychological aspect of staying calm and trusting his body that it can do it, because the stress was what was making the movement that was coming in conflict with a good sound, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have one way. I look at the person. It's as if you said to a doctor, how do you heal everyone, you know? Mm-hmm. Well, you look at the patient, you look, you listen, you try to find what's good for that person. But what I see a lot is people move too much, like people overwork. It's as if we think it can't be that simple. If I want a good sound, I have to work hard, because we're taught since we're little kids, you want to succeed in life, you have to work hard. And we get all mixed up in that working hard thing, and we overthink things, and we overwork. And sometimes, because I see a lot of big movements going on that are detrimental to the sound. Mm. More than the opposite, you know. There are little movements, but I don't think anyone's brain can really control each individual little movements that we do. We have to make things simpler for us and let our body, trust our body that it can do its thing.
Hmm. Very interesting.
But yeah, and you know, you might get bored with doing long tones all the time the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes when a student is a bit more advanced, I'll start to use long tones to develop dynamics. So I'll do like this. I'll get my foot.
Hmm. German Haynes, Hermann. He says he uses long tones not much for sound, but for embouchure work Working on articulation forces me to focus on my airstream.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you don't have air, you don't have... The tongue is not chopping anything. So... Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can use long tones to develop the dynamics like this. Mm-hmm. Can practice it with vibrato, without vibrato, you know, change things around.
Yeah, so hopefully that helps. Silver Flute, he wants to know, or she wants to know, how do you prevent air leaks in your flute? Yeah, well, air leaks can happen, you mean just leaks probably, because air leaks are kind of like you accidentally miss your hole when you touch the key. Like leaks are leaks from the pad, but you could call it air leaks too. How to prevent them? Eventually pads degrade if you have regular pads, and so do synthetic pads. Synthetic pads also, not the pads themselves, but the stuff holding it goes away. It just basically means the pad is now not flat anymore, so it's now imperfect somewhere, you know, so it causes that leak, causes air to go in, and then causes the thing. And what a lot of flutists do to supplement that is just by pressing harder, which isn't good because you're introducing a lot of pressure on this fine metal, usually silver, and silver can bend more than other metals. Gold can bend a lot as well too. Bend can actually, I think gold bends even more easily. So you don't want to press. What you want to do is go and take it to a shop. But to prevent and make your pads last longer, having lighter technique has proven to have people's flutes last longer. Pressing harder too, from what people have been saying to me, also prevents it go longer too. For some reason, people have hard pressing, the pads tend to stay flat, but then the mechanism suffers instead.
Okay.
So, but yeah, also lighter
you have
touch.
To make sure you don't
fluids.
Let's say your flute has water in it. You make sure it's the keys are always on top.
Yes.
So you don't have water going in.
Yeah, but there's also tricks that a lot of people have been doing since the 1800s, even with wooden flutes, especially with wooden flutes. And this is a trick that not many people talk about, but people, and I don't advise you to do it, but people do it, but don't, it's not me saying you should do it. A lot of people, they take almond oil or any type of oil, and they take one drip and they take out the head joint and they drip it so that it goes directly down this tube here where there's no keys, and then it stays there. And this is what they used to do with wooden flutes as well. And when you play, all that liquid that you make, all the condensation, goes down that root and doesn't go on your pads, doesn't go anywhere.
Oh.
So it actually stops from moisture getting to those pads and never gets there. It, in fact, drips out super fast out of the flute.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. It's a little trick that people do, and people used to do that with wooden ones, because with wooden flute,
yeah,
it would crack so even more. So, like I said, also just specific types of fluids, you know, sugary
but it's good
drinks.
To bring it to
it to a shop, like we said before.
Like every year to make sure everything's fine.
Right, exactly.
Because the problem is that the flute doesn't degrade like in one day. It's something.
It does degrade over day. It gradually degrades over each day.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not one day it's amazing and one day it's terrible.
No, it gradually gets worse. Yeah,
we get used to our flute.
Yep, exactly.
Because it's so gradual.
Yeah.
That we get used to it, and then we can still play and sound quite okay on it.
Yeah.
But then maybe now we're making problems with the mechanism or other things. So you shouldn't wait for your flute to sound bad to go
have
it checked, because maybe it does sound bad, but you're not aware because you're compensating in certain ways.
I would say the moment you're aware that something could be wrong, even if it's just a slight hesitation, go and bring it to the shop. They'll look at it. They usually do free estimates before they do anything. They can check it. So do that, because your flute will constantly degrade. You know, at the point of it being fully repaired, it's going to start degrading again because of how you play, because of oxidization, because of all types of different things. So, yeah. Those are just some preventative tips. Don't press too hard, because that just introduces way more problems than just the pads. So, and more expensive replacements. So, because remember, it's made out of precious metals that are like jewelry, you know, same, virtually some of those some of those keys have the exact same thickness or even thinner thicknesses than your jewelry. So if you break your jewelry, you're gonna, you know, it's and there's many different mechanisms that are rubbing against each other all the time. So that's introducing constant loss, you know, mm-hmm. and it's going to introduce more and more problems that way. So yeah, but that was the one I remember learning that trick, and it's a very interesting trick, but you got to be very confident, and it works surprisingly well. What else is here? Pass plug in preventing leaks. Okay. What percentage of Robert Coles again? He wants to know what percentage of my practice time should be spent on long tones. I say 5-10 minutes. 5-10 minutes for me. That's me, but that everyone's different. 5-10 minutes sometimes. When I was doing it, like actually practicing more and more, it would be that much for me. You?
I don't know. For years I did like 30 minutes of sound exercises.
That's
but,
different. Yeah.
But not just long tones. Yeah. I had different ones I would change and use De La Sonorité. I liked it. So there was all the breathing part as well that I would put in there. But I think it was too much. I think I was kind of losing my time because my teacher was saying 30 minutes of this, 30 minutes of that. And she was very... I think I could have worked on other stuff, but... It was probably good because I focused so much on my sound, my embouchure and everything. Now I can take my flute and sound good right away.
Mm-hmm.
When, you know, before I had good days and bad days. And now, yeah, if I just... Of course, I'll do all the notes on my flute and then I'll start playing, but it takes 2 minutes and then I'm good to go. But
mm-hmm.
I still do exercises sometimes because sometimes I want to really focus on one thing.
Yeah,
but I don't mm-hmm. know. It depends on your level, what are your strengths and your weaknesses, and also you don't want to, let's say you're really working hard, maybe you're going to be very tired after 10 minutes mm-hmm. of that if you're really doing it with a lot of attention, so
mm-hmm.
you shouldn't do more than 5 minutes,
mm-hmm,
10 minutes,
mm-hmm,
and then go
mm-hmm.
to something else.
Mm-hmm.
It's difficult to answer those things.
Yeah, it is. Silver Flute, I just want to go back to Silver Flute because they were kind of talking in the chat about that. I'll just tell you that from what I'm reading here, it's that it's not the pads at all. It's probably something to do with the mechanism and not even the screw. Because some of the people, they were saying like, oh, I can just fix it by turning a screw. Don't turn screws on your flute. If you have no idea what the hell you're what you're doing, don't do it. Go and learn, then do it. Because turning those screws changes not just one thing but something else on the flute, and then you're introducing huge problems and bending keys big time. That's just the reality of it.
Go to a shop.
Even the shop might not be, like, from what I was reading, it sounds like that shop might not be looking at all the problems and they're just focusing on one place, and they should be focusing on the whole flute to be able to find out where the full extent of the damage is, because it sounds like the cup is actually now bent over and not the actual pad itself. The pad and the shims all can be fine, but if the key has been bent so much that it's now wobbling inside the rod, then you can shim as much as you want. It's always gonna leak. So that's my professional experience from that, because I know that. I've seen that 100,000 times.
It could be inside here.
It could be right here, because it's the F. So it's like,
yeah.
You see right here with this F, the F key here, there's a lot of things
sharp
that can go wrong, because there's two screws here between the E and the F that introduce all types of mechanisms here. It moves a lot of different keys. It moves this key here, and then this key moves this key here. You know how intricate this little system is here to make that work. But if you move only one of those screws, you're introducing huge amounts of problems, friction, and all types of different things. So go and bring it to a tech, because now you're introducing a whole buttload of problems. So yeah, that's the complexity of those things. I really advise that you learn, go and learn what those screws can do, then do it. But don't just get a screwdriver and then practice on your own flute, because you're going to be paying huge bills to get those things replaced.
And sometimes when it's too far gone, it's
more
expensive to repair than to buy.
That's right, and more times than not, it actually comes to that. So
mm-hmm.
really, you are in that majority. So I would not. I know a lot of flutists that had screws, had those little, either bought the computer, you know, a little computer screw, or they bought the actual one for flute for repairing.
The screwdriver.
Yeah, the screwdriver. Go and learn how to do it first before buying it. If you really think that you can, if you have that desire to know how your flute works, go, you know, Landel Flutes does stuff. There's a bunch of, go and apprentice with a repair technician in your local town. I'm sure they would be glad to help you out for something, you know. And but don't do it unknowingly that, oh, it's just a screw, and if I turn it, that's actually not going to be the solution 9 times out of 10, because there are so many other things
that
going
you're
on.
Not aware of.
Yeah, they're going on.
That you're probably damaging.
Yeah. Because it's crazy how many times I've seen that. Okay, just wanted to clear that up because there was a huge amount of chat about that, so I wanted to make sure. You can repair your flute yourself, and you need somebody. Kitty Paw says you can repair the flute yourself, but you need a special kit. The kit's not enough.
Knowledge.
The kit is literally not enough. The kit, yeah. You're missing out on 99% of what else you need. 1% is that kit, and then the other 99% is trying that on hundreds of flutes, or going and learning from somebody and trying it on a couple hundred, you know, a couple flutes, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And being able to fix that, because if you can't, you got to go and learn those things. A kit does not solve the problem. In fact, it'll probably make more problems in the long run. Because when you bring it to a technician, eventually after 10 years, when you've been self-repairing, you can have huge issues and they might not even be able to repair the flute, or they have to remove material, which is also very bad. Yeah. Herman wants to know, could you say a little bit about the differences between French tonguing and the other ta? I guess that's all that means. Yeah.
It's not clear to me what French tonguing is.
It's a more direct tongue. It's a more direct and
what
more spitting
laid,
I thought.
What I mean is that tonguing between the lips, like the...
Maybe. The rice,
you know?
Tonguing a little bit?
Yeah. And I'm not very good at that one. And I don't like to use it so much. I use it sometimes when I want something more percussive. And I have time to tongue, because the tongue is going further, so it takes more time,
mm-hmm.
You know? But what I realized, because I had years where I was not even able to do it, and then I realized it's not when you bring the tongue forward that it's happening, it's when you release the tongue that the sound happens. So now, okay, you're in my way a little bit.
Sorry.
I do it like this. Focus on releasing.
Yeah, yeah. Totally.
And yeah. So yeah. That's it. It's really between the lips. So
yeah. Yeah. But I never even see that.
Not many people talk like that.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
I don't know what that thing is. And
maybe that's not.
I went in France and my teacher studied in France.
Right. And brought that knowledge over here.
They
sure.
never told me about the French tonguing.
Right.
I only heard about the French tonguing when I went in the United States.
Ah, well, that can be a whole entire different
so
thing.
So, I'm confused, you know, because one of my...
tonguing between the lips, that's what Herman
says.
Yeah,
okay. Because that's funny, because one of my teachers studied with Rampal, another one with Larieux, and with Marion, and all those guys, you know, and Raymond Guillot. They're the people my teachers studied with.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, they told me about the tonguing between the lips,
mm-hmm.
but it's not like they told me to tongue like that all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But. Mm. And they never told me about the French style of tonguing, but maybe it's because, you know, like in France, you don't call it French fries, or Danish in Denmark. Are called pastries.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's why, you know?
Maybe.
Because I was like,
what's French tonguing? For a while,
I wasn't sure. But yeah, I think it's just another tool when you want to tongue that way.
Mm-hmm.
You can use it, but it's not the only way. But
no.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's a way.
That's
but you have to make sure it's very solid here when you do that.
Because
mm-hmm. there's a lot of... It's very in front and it can disturb your embouchure, so your embouchure
totally.
Has to be very stable, and then
mm-hmm.
and it's not really the what changed it all for me. I used to think it's when my tongue was hitting. That was important.
That was important.
No, it's when the tongue moves out of the way that it's important. Gotcha. When I understood that, then I was able to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think that's pretty much it.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's interesting because also we don't tell, but you can also play without tonguing sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
You can, if you have a high note that's a piano, mm-hmm. and you want to... And it sounds like it starts from nothing,
mm-hmm.
or at the beginning of the Doppler, you know, the... If you start with no tongue, it's interesting. No teacher ever told me that, but then you listen to recordings. And one of my teacher told me that. But, you know, we don't talk about that much, but like Marion, I've been listening to him a little bit. He does that sometimes. Mm-hmm. No tongue, just... And it's so beautiful because it seems like it's starting from nothing.
Mm-hmm.
There's many different ways.
Yeah.
Another way is the peu. Do you ever use peu?
It depends.
Like when you want to do very soft and...
There's different effects for it.
That's a nice one, too. It's a bit different, but...
Mm-hmm.
So there's... You know, there's peu, but peu, you wouldn't... It's just for the first note.
Yes.
You don't do peu between
then
two
peu,
notes.
Peu.
No, you don't do peu, peu. You just do one peu.
Peu, peu, peu.
That's it. Just one peu.
Yeah.
You close your lips and you open... You have the air ready and... You release.
Mm-hmm.
It's just when you have a soft note, a bit like the no tongue. But mm-hmm. I prefer the no tongue than the peu personally.
Mm-hmm.
But some people, they make it very beautiful.
Mm.
And then you have, like, behind the teeth, the t-t-t, like at the junction of the teeth and the But yeah, it's efficient. But I think it's slower. For me, it's slower. But I've seen people do it very fast. That's when you have to respect, like, we're all a bit different. Then you find what sounds good for you, and you go in that direction.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Going back to the repairing stuff, there are some things that you can do. Like, if a spring pops, you can fix that, but you gotta be very careful with the springs. When a spring pops out, you gotta put no pressure and, like, lightly bring it back up to the screw, and not just pull and then bring it to the screw, because now you've re-tensified that spring now. So now it's going to react way differently to all the other springs in your hand. So you're going to have different technique, and then you're going to introduce problems in your hand and get pain. And cleaning the flute, don't use any abrasives. If you're doing cosmetic things, like there's grime and stuff, like somebody mentioned using rubbing candle wax and stuff like that, like paraffin on it, it'll get rid of it. It sort of works. It works. But I mean, cosmetic things... Don't use any abrasives, because it's you're breathing in that stuff. When you put it on there, you're also putting it on your fingers, no matter how, you know, and you're breathing
in,
it actually absorbs in your skin super fast.
The skin absorbs everything.
Yeah. So,
well, not everything, but
enough. So, cosmetic things, sure, there are some things that can be done, but, like, really, don't touch screws, don't touch pads, don't touch those other things.
It's a bit tricky to do that.
Yeah. And get a junk flute and take it apart. Buy a flute for $99 from Amazon and rip it apart and try doing stuff with that.
Yeah,
but
don't take
your
good flute.
Understand how it goes. But that only teaches you only so much, too. So really,
it's better
about
to go take a real
course. Go and take a real thing.
Course,
so
yeah.
So you guys have any more questions? We'll answer two or three more questions. If you guys have any more, we'll answer them. In the meantime, while you guys think of some questions, Emily also has, and we have the studio is out. You're teaching some lessons online now. So,
yeah, I love it.
You love it. We love it. And I'm sure you guys will love it too.
I wasn't sure in the beginning about teaching on Skype because you can't touch.
On Skype or FaceTime, any of those things. Yeah, right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because,
you can't touch
that person and be like,
right.
But it's very fun because you really see well on the...
Yeah. You can see pretty well now. The resolution's great now. And yeah.
And usually when I teach, I'm not necessarily face-to-face, so I think I miss things. It's going to even change the way I teach in person.
Yeah, sure. Because
when we're next to each other, there's in that angle, I don't see everything either, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So It's interesting. I like it. I think it's efficient. And yeah, as long as people put enough light and I can see them, then and I can hear them well, it's all good, you know.
Exactly.
And
yeah, so you can fun. Yeah, you can email us at info@theflutechannel.com. So info@theflutechannel.com, and we can let you know what's available for you. Yeah, and that's really much it for that. And then we have the festival coming up. So next week we're probably not going to have Just Practicing or a Flute Talk podcast for the weekend. So we're going to have a lot of footage from the festival going to be slowly coming out the week after very quickly. The festival will also be available for people to download the actual 3 days worth of lessons and masterclassing, your group lesson, morning masterclasses. We're going to have that as a little package thing in about 2 weeks that people can, you know, you didn't miss out, you can go and
we're gonna sell it for
I think like $15 or $20 for the 6, 9, 12, like, you know, 18 hours worth of lessons and group stuff that we're gonna try to segment a bit better for everybody. Also the concert will be out for free on the channel as well, that we're gonna put out, where you and Alexa will be playing. And that's about it, I think. As Victor is asking, is there a book coming soon? Yes, the book is coming soon. We're just like finishing it, and it's going to be out in digital and in a hard version as well. And
it's
plus,
already,
we have other books. And, yeah,
it's just
well, we don't need to. It's coming.
The editing part is in the finishing, but
it's all conceptually done.
Yeah.
Just like we're just putting it together,
yeah,
Thinking and stuff.
About.
We're gonna make a couple of new things.
Yeah,
yeah, some cool little books for people. Yeah, that's going to be really cool. And we're going to be slowly transitioning out of our merch store that we have right now. We're going to be going to Teespring, which a lot of Americans, I think, know about as well. And it's worldwide, too. But Teespring, they're very good. So we're going to go with them with some of our new merch that we're going to have out soon. Some cool stuff that I think everyone's going to really enjoy getting from us. Yes, in the book and everything. So, yeah. What else do we have here? How much experience... Oh, now for the festival? How much experience do you need to be accepted, or is it any experience? For the flute festival, it can be anyone. And you can come as a elementary school flutist, a high school flutist, you know, any age group. You could be starting older, adult. It doesn't matter. It's for everybody. It's really, the morning classes are this real, like, you know, melting pot.
Well, some people decide not to play.
Right.
And
totally
it's fine. But first year we had people that decided not to play on the first day, and then on the second day they brought their flute.
Yeah, that can happen. But
because they realized the morning class is really, it's a bit like this, you know.
Yeah, it's exactly like this, pretty much. Yeah.
We play more, but I start by asking what people would like to work on, and then we work on that, and I bring exercises that we can all do together. And that's pretty much what we did last year.
Exactly.
And then when there was more time, I said, anyone want to play a study or a piece or anything that we could work on? And we did that. And in the afternoon, it's a real master class with a pianist, and Alexa still teaches.
Which is like, even if you're a high schooler or somebody who's starting the flute, you're going to hear what the level of flute is. You know, you get to hear what this high level is, you know.
Yeah.
It's really quite awesome, to be honest.
There's people that are very advanced that play for her. There's people
that
you get
to
advanced.
Hear her play too, though,
you
so
get
that
to hear
helps
her.
So, yeah.
You get to hear her, her, you know, what she says to those people to help them, her counsel, you know,
right.
You get to listen to different pieces. Maybe you don't know the flute repertoire that much. You learn more. You know, I always thought those courses were good for all of that.
Mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
getting to know your instrument better, different sounds, different.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What piece did you just play to demonstrate?
I think I played the Doppler Hungarian Fantasy.
Yeah,
Pastoral
Doppler.
Lampoise.
Yeah, Doppler Fantasy, the Hungarian Fantasy.
Yeah.
For solo flute, or
flute
for flute
piano,
or flute and orchestra. Yeah. You also played a little bit of Chandelinos before that, too.
Yeah, I played a little bit of Chandelinos.
Yeah. What is the best company for beginner flutes? There's a couple. There's a couple of them. We don't in any way are sponsored by any of them. But Yamaha, Trevor James, Sonari is good. Gemeinhardt's good. Gotta try all types of flutes. That's our thing. We have a thing with the Flute Center of New York, which has the largest selection of flutes in the whole world. You can go to their website, flutesforsale4.com. So flutesforsale.com, and you can use our code TFC, and you can try up to.
If you use our code TFC, it helps us when you buy the flute, and also. It gives you, you can try more flutes for longer, and you have a longer warranty.
So, yeah.
It's all in the description.
Yeah, so you get to try the flutes for 10 days, and you can pick your flutes. So you pick your flutes, and you get to try them. But the point is that you should try as many flutes of different brands as you can, or maybe some of the same type of flute, brand of flute, but different models, so you can really see whether or not the flute fits for you, because...
Well, you have to make sure you try the flute before you buy it, I think.
Oh, that's what you have to do. So you have to try them before you buy them. Exactly.
No, but it's because sometimes if you buy online, you don't necessarily have that luxury. But with them, you
do. But that's the luxury with this, is what I'm saying.
That's why
I mentioned it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you can try it up for 10 days. You can even just call them and talk to them. They're all flutists there. The whole office is full of flutists. Just tell them that we sent you, and they'll take care of you. And there's been a lot of people... who have bought flutes from our videos, from our
they bought flutes from them using our
advice,
code.
Yeah, and our advice. And so, yeah, you can definitely check that out. And but yeah, there's a lot of good flutes. Trevor James makes good flutes. Yamaha makes good flutes. They all make good flutes. A lot of good flute makers now. Like the standard flute that people make now, 150 years ago would have been amazing. 150 years ago, you know what I mean? So it's really advanced a lot as well. We'll do one final question. And you guys have been so great today. Thanks so much for taking part of it. Remix wants to know, what is your favorite type of music for flute?
My favorite type of music
for the flute?
I don't know. I like a lot of different types.
Different types, yeah.
Well, yeah. I like the... I think I like the 20th century a lot.
Yeah, 20th century music.
There's a lot of... I guess for flute, there's a lot of stuff there, and it's really written for this flute.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Baroque music was written for another type of flute, really, that also needed less air than this flute.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes it's more of a... You know, it's a bit different.
Right.
But, like, Debussy, Nielsen... All those composers, they wrote for this modern flute, and there's beautiful music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think a little bit of 20th century, a little bit of romantic music is really good, too.
We don't have that much romantic music, though.
But it's good. But anything that's not romantic music is good.
I know, like Reinecke and all that. It's
so
beautiful.
Yeah.
It's just I wish we had more, because I love romantic music. Mm-hmm. Like on the piano, I love playing Chopin.
A lot of flutists... Yeah, a lot of flutists...
a big Chopin
fan. Yeah, a lot of flutists tend to rearrange Brahms and Chopin a lot, so...
Chopin has beautiful melodies, so it's
yeah,
it's easy
true.
To...
Yeah, it's true. Exactly. So, yeah, so look out for all those new videos that we're going to have in the future from the festival. Plus, we have some new videos, including some music videos. And we're going to do some more Tom Play stuff as well. Check out all those videos from Just Practicing. We have a couple new ones in the Just Practicing series. Plus, we have loads of videos, 130 or 140 videos of other music. If you're not familiar with us, go and check out the backlog of all the playlists and all those things like that. And that really does help us out as well. Just watching our videos and asking us questions and all those things, you know. Yeah. That's it, I think. And then, yeah, be sure to be in touch with us on our community page on YouTube. If you haven't subscribed, please subscribe. Like this video after you watch this and leave a question or a comment down in the description, below the description for us. That also helps us out a lot. And I think now it's open out to everybody, so you can comment there as well, including the chat. So, yeah, thanks, guys. All your questions were so awesome. And we'll be sure to be back in about 2 weeks. 2 weeks, we'll be back for another Flute Talk, or two and a half, or 2 or 3 weeks, but we'll do a Just Practicing in 2 weeks. Just Practicing in 2 weeks, and then in 3 weeks, we'll do a Flute Talk podcast again. Thanks, everybody, so much for watching. Really appreciate it. See ya. Bye.